Many people don't realize how robust the human eye truly is. Though it feels delicate, being a direct extension of our brain and central nervous system, the eye is built with resilience in mind.
Close your eyes.
For instance, the six muscles that control the eye are predominantly made up of fast twitch fibers. These are the same type of muscle fibers that set elite sprinters apart from an average person. Remarkably, these muscles allow the eye to move up to 15 times faster than the human leg, and yet they don't tire quickly. Thanks to unique glucose pathways, these eye muscles resist fatigue even with their rapid and continuous movements. Protection is another strong suit of the eye. A significant portion, about 80% of the eye, is nestled securely within the skull. This design allows it to withstand significant pressure, equivalent to the force from a 5-story fall, and still remain structurally intact. But as with all things, the eye has its weaknesses. In the modern world, certain tools can expose these vulnerabilities. Shearing and scratching instruments, for instance, can cause irreparable damage, especially when approached from the sides. Even everyday items like a spoon in the wrong hands and with a deliberate intent could inflict harm. To extricate such a deeply protected organ would be no easy feat. Yet, with enough determination and disregard for the sanctity of human life, it's far from impossible. You're listening to Heinous, an Asian true crime podcast brought to you by MediaCorp and produced by 1UP Media. This episode contains scenes of graphic imagery and violence. Listener discretion is advised. On Jurong West Street 65, a grim testament to the vulnerabilities of the human body was revealed, with Gabriel Lee as its presenter. This man, teetering on the edge of a mental breakdown, met Elsie Lai online in 2011. Within months, she was pulled into a psychological drama, moving in and unwittingly becoming a central character in his increasingly dark and twisted tales of hauntings and possessions. In March 2012, their story took a hopeful turn. Perhaps seeking a respite to normality, the pair took a trip to Genting Highlands. There, against the backdrop of misty landscapes, Gabriel proposed. Elsie, for reasons known only to her, agreed. But any semblance of peace was short-lived. Upon their return, the atmosphere grew more charged. On the night of March 30th, the walls of their apartment seemed to reverberate with unsettling sounds. Pain groans, high-pitched screams, and otherworldly statements.
Go back. Go back to the sky.
Thankfully, as the night continued, the noises gradually grew softer, possibly reassuring that whatever ride the couple were embarking on had ended. Until... It's 6:30 a.m. in the grey light of dawn. A housemate feels a knot of anxiety in his stomach. As he approaches the couple's door, the irregular stain captures his attention. Dark blood smeared in an unsettling pattern, as if interrupted in haste. His pulse races, each thud echoing loudly in his ears. The walls feel too close, the shadows too dark, and every minute detail of the apartment seems to be in sinister focus. Without a second thought, he bursts into the living area, his urgent voice rousing the main tenant from a disturbed slumber. The phone is snatched and dialed almost instinctively.
Hello? We need help. Something's wrong in our flat. We're at Jurong West Street 65. Block 633, 14th floor.
Isn't this the same unit that reported the disturbance earlier?
Yes, but now, there's blood on the doors.
Alright, don't do anything. Move out if you need to. We're on our way.
Within a mere 10 minutes, paramedics pull up. They often arrive with the police in situations where there's clear evidence of injury, always bracing for the unexpected. The moment they step inside, a metallic scent, unmistakably that of blood, fills the air. Peering into the slightly open door of the room, a scene of ghastly intimacy unveils itself. Elsie Lai, naked from the waist up, lies eerily still on Gabriel. Both their skin tones contrast starkly against the backdrop of thick, congealed blood that blankets them. Unsure of the full extent of the scene and potential danger, the paramedics hesitate, choosing to wait for the police, who are said to be mere minutes away. But in this tense atmosphere, a mere 5 minutes can reshape the entire situation. As the clock ticked, one wouldn't immediately recognize the sounds unfolding. At first, the prevailing quiet was interrupted by an almost mundane metallic scrape, reminiscent of a spoon stirring a cup of tea. But what followed next was less familiar. A soft, wet noise akin to delving into the pulp of an overripe fruit. The unsettling combination of these sounds, particularly the spoon's unyielding metal meeting soft organic matter, painted a chilling picture. In addition, there were also audible cues that were unsettling in their ambiguity. A muffled, fibrous tearing, not wholly unlike the rending of fabric, but with an organic undertone. Interspersed with these sounds might be the occasional soft thud of fallen clumps on the floor. These awkward sounds pace with an erratic rhythm, sometimes carelessly quick, other times laboriously slow, created a chilling orchestra. The paramedics, already unsettled, realized the situation was evolving. At 6:55 a.m., two police officers arrived at the flat. Their anxiety palpable, they discovered a chilling sight at the building's base. A dislodged human eye resting amidst the grass. Inside the flat, the once cacophonic room had quieted to a haunting soliloquy of groans, intertwined with rhythmic chants. It seemed that it would be up to them to put an end to this madness. Rushing into the room, the officer surprisingly found what was assumed to be a fairly docile Gabriel. He wasn't holding a weapon, nor charging one against them. He was beside the lifeless body of Elsie Lai, clutching a yellow object that resembled a cross. Scanning her body, they found bent metal spoons, forks that were intertwined in Elsie's hair. A pair of pruning shears, a hammer, a rotary can opener, and two pairs of scissors were also found beside her. But further inspection revealed the horror. Elsie was found dead and mutilated. Autopsy reports later would reveal that she had multiple injuries to her head, neck, and limbs, including a gaping 12-centimeter wound across her neck and cuts throughout her ankles. So deep were each wound that it revealed bone tissue and pierced through the spinal cord. But worst of all was the reckless butchering of Elsie by parts. From the slicing of her windpipe, to her eyeballs and clumps of hair that were found strewn around the room and block. Hey listeners, with Halloween quickly approaching, we are thrilled to share that we are giving away, that's right, giving away a pair of tickets to this year's edition of Halloween Horror Nights. All you need to do is to have you and your brave companion fill out a simple form by the 15th of October. That's it. Again, both you and your intended companion must fill out a simple form by the 15th of October in order to enter. The form is listed in the episode's description. So sign up now, but only if you dare. Upon Gabriel's arrest, authorities promptly sent him for a psychiatric evaluation. Given the extreme nature of his actions, there was a general consensus that Gabriel's mental state required thorough assessment. During the evaluation, Gabriel consistently referred to his fiancée as Elsie Lucifer. he was diagnosed with psychosis, a condition where one often struggles to differentiate between reality and fantasy. Interestingly, Gabriel's strong Catholic upbringing instilled in him a fervent belief in ghosts and spiritual possessions from a young age. As his psychosis developed, these beliefs became obsessions, driving him to the edge. The findings from his psychiatric evaluation played a crucial role in court proceedings. They painted the picture of a man who might have avoided such a tragic path had he received proper medical intervention earlier. Consequently, the charge against him shifted from murder to culpable homicide. In court, Gabriel Lee appeared remorseful as he pleaded guilty and admitted to his harrowing actions. With chilling detail, he recounted his attempt to decapitate Miss Lai using an unsettling array of tools: pruning shears, scissors, a rotary can opener, and a hammer. In his confession, Gabriel also acknowledged a disturbing attempt to amputate her right foot. The gruesome nature of his actions sparked divided public opinion. Deputy Public Prosecutor Hei Hung Chun argued for a sentence of at least 12 years, given the brutality involved. He viewed this duration as a fitting punishment for the heinous crime. However, Gabriel's lawyer Sunil Sathisan counted that a 10-year jail term would be more than sufficient. Explaining in court, he killed a lady that he loved. That is punishment for him emotionally. This is a heartbroken man who deserves one chance. His team further proposed that Gabriel's older brother, a surgeon, will supervise him after his release. Both viewpoints were divisive, and at the same time, both seemed fair in their own way. It's easy to look at Gabriel and simply paint a picture of a man who is incapable of returning back to society safely. But it's important to note that post-treatment, he displayed no further psychotic symptoms. His greatest error, perhaps, might have been an oversight of his deteriorating mental state, which had catastrophic consequences. But if you were part of the victim's family, would you want to take the risk of seeing him back out on the streets? What if he relapsed? Throughout the trial, it became evident that Elsie Lai's family hadn't known Gabriel well. In fact, they were unaware of the couple's engagement and wished that they had never met. In a statement, Elsie's mother, Madam Chen, bravely shared,
"I didn't want to look at him or be in the same room, but I knew I had to face him to try to get justice for my daughter."
It was a heartbreaking case, one that required a long time to deliberate and assess fully. As the years passed, the residential estate of Jurong West Street 65 transformed, leaving virtually no trace or memory of both Gabriel and Elsie. The current tenants were not even aware of the grisly past. Finally, in 2017, after a five-year-long trial, the court found Gabriel guilty of culpable homicide and sentenced him to a 10-year imprisonment. The verdict was met with vehement opposition from Elsie's family, particularly from her grieving mother. She says,
"My daughter died so horribly. 10 years for a life? It's too much. It's not fair."
Across other media outlets, she continued fighting for her daughter's memory, informing the Sunday Times of the hardship and pain that their family endured. In the article, she says,
"My daughter is gone forever. She died in such a horrific way, and there will always be a hole in my heart. One of the saddest things is for a parent to bury their child."
Elsie's mother's response was intense, heartbreaking, but understandable, because the verdict had to account for the complexities from both sides. This meant that the sentence was backdated to April 1st, 2012, when Gabriel was first remanded in custody. Effectively, he would have already been released minimally on April 1st, 2022, or possibly earlier if he was on good behavior. Fearing for her own well-being, Elsie's mother gave a chilling response.
"What if he comes out and comes after our family? If he hurt my daughter because he believed she was the devil,
He might think we are devils too.
Our thoughts are with Elsie's family, hoping they find the safety and security they rightfully deserve. As for Gabriel, we sincerely hope that he continues to receive the care and support required of his condition, so that he, as well as others facing similar struggles, may finally put his demons to rest. Heinous, an Asian true crime podcast, is brought to you by MediaCorp and 1UP Media. This episode was produced and written by Guang Jin, edited by Alex, narrated by Jason, audio experience by Ethan Sam, additional engineering by Ashley from 1UP Media. Special thanks to executive producer Danny Cordy from MediaCorp. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next one.